Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that makes using different currencies easy. With Wise, you can send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate. There are no hidden fees either. See exactly what you'll pay up front, every time. Join 16 million customers already saving with Wise. To learn how Wise could work for you, download the app or visit wise.com.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else have we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik. Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about unexpected science history.
Well, that's the unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen, wherever you get your podcasts.
I've got a photo here of Mum actually on my phone, which I'm going to open up for you. It's a lovely picture of me with my arm round Mum's shoulders, and she's wearing a black sweater with diamantes all along the collar. And we're just posing for a photo. I mean, she had such a beautiful smile, didn't she? Smiling like a Cheshire cat.
When we lose a loved one, all we have left are our memories, either photos like this one or our cherished recollections. I'm Rahila Barno, and you're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service. For this episode of Heart and Soul, I'm on a journey to explore how I should remember my mum after she died. We're a Muslim family and it's traditional for people to have a khatam, where friends and family gather in prayer and share food. But my mum was different. Even though she was devout, she didn't want this. But would it be un-Islamic of me to not follow tradition?
It's a beautiful, warm and sunny May day here in Birmingham, and I'm meeting my sister Nabila here in Small Heath Park. Actually, it's probably the third or fourth time I've visited Birmingham after my mum's funeral, which was nearly 3 years ago. And the last time we were actually here as a family, Nabila, I don't know if you remember this, it was in 1989, and I remember the date because we came to see an amazing performance of the world-renowned Qawwali singer Nusrat Fateh Ali. It was also recorded by the BBC. Do you remember?
I do have some vague recollections of that, but not as clear as your recollections.
We're all very, very close to my mum. We had a really special relationship with her. She had such a kind heart, such a smiley face, and really she'd go out of her way to help people as well. I remember when I think there were some people in Pakistan and they were in difficulty, and mum went round to her friends and asked them if they would like to make a donation. I mean, that's one of the memories I have of mum.
She was a compassionate and caring person. She used to say to me, we're only on this earth for 2 seconds. And what that means is that whatever you say is what people will remember when you go. Nothing else, not what you own, not material things, not your wealth, but how you treat other people. And she expected that to help her in the afterlife. And I think that that was quite an insightful and very astute way in which she dealt with people her whole life.
I mean, Mum was really religious as well, wasn't she? She was very into Islam. She used to read the Quran every day. She tried to read all her prayers 5 times a day. She was very religious, wasn't she?
Her faith was very important to her, but she didn't ram it down other people's throats. She was private about it. She expressed that faith at relevant times, but she never forced us to do anything that we didn't want to do in terms of our faith, because she said it's intention. And unless you intend to, for example, pray, there's no point me telling you to do it.
My mum Barno passed away nearly 3 years ago. She was only 77 years old. She was born in Narawal near Lahore in Pakistan, and she moved to England in 1966 after an arranged marriage in her early 20s. Her death from COVID and pneumonia, caught from her carers, was hard for me and for us all. But dying at the heart of the pandemic meant we couldn't celebrate her life in any way but the most basic way. 3 years on, and I have the opportunity to talk to my sister Nabila about how we can remember her as she would have wanted.
She didn't really want to talk about what would happen after her death when I asked her, but that was only recently. And she said, she always said, whatever will be, and whatever God wills, he wills.
I used to ring her almost every single day. And we discussed things about life, about death. I remember one of the conversations I had with her was about afterlife. And we talked about, I think maybe mum had gone to somebody's house and they'd had a gathering of women who read the Quran. It was known as a khatam. And I said, mum, you know, I don't think we're going to do a khatam for you when you pass away. Would you like a khatam? And mum basically turned round and said, well, I don't want you to feed people who can afford to feed themselves. It's better to feed those who can't support themselves, can't afford to feed themselves. And there are more blessings if you actually do something for the poor. Did mum have any similar conversations with you as well?
Not particularly about after she died. She didn't really want to talk about what would happen after her death.
When a Muslim dies, in line with tradition, the family organise a khatam, where they invite friends and relatives to their home or to the local mosque to recite the Quran and to have a meal. It's done on the 3rd and 40th day after the death, and then on the 1st and sometimes subsequent anniversaries. But what had we missed by not having a gathering or khatam for mum? I decided to visit a friend, Bushra, who had recently lost her elderly mum.
Come inside, the door's open. I'm so sorry. Oh, I just came to give some food and then started chatting and I completely forgot the time.
It's all right.
Come inside. Bushra and I got to know each other after I interviewed her about her work as a lawyer. It was on my BBC local radio programme, which featured news and views from the Asian communities in the northwest of England.
How do you like your tea? Strong or medium?
Just medium, slightly milky.
Bushra lives in a large detached house in an affluent part of Blackburn. It's a town where about 30% of the population is Muslim, where many, like me, can trace their roots back to Pakistan or India. Bushra was supportive to me when my mum died. She also lost her elderly mother recently, so I think she'd be a good person to talk to about khatams and the grieving process over a cup of tea.
I think every step really helped, because it was like everybody together and everybody talking about it and praying and, you know, sharing your grief. And like I said, we were all united in our grief. So that was nice. I mean, it gives you kind of peace that everybody's feeling, and that pain starts going a bit less, and you realise that, you know, that it's something that happens to everybody.
Do you think things are actually changing?
Yeah, I think one of the main reasons is because in the old days, they used to have extended families. So, for example, like my mum passed away, and she's passed away in this house where she lived, and we were all there for her. But if you're living separately from the family, and a lot of people are nowadays, so it's not often that they're actually even with any of the member of the family, then it's easier to say closure and then you've got to go back to your homes. But in our case, I think the lengthened grieving process was actually helpful to us to adjust. And I think you don't realise the reasoning or methodology behind it all, but you do once you've gone through it, because the way we've had to go through it, and we're now understanding those steps helped us to start to adjust.
And what do you think about people, you know, for example, like me, not doing a khatam? I mean, do you feel that we've missed out on anything at all?
No, it's only prayers being sent to them. And you give...
Are they being sent to them?
The intention is supposed to be that it's prayers being sent to them and given to them. And that's how you do the closure. It's fine. I mean, you've done the job, so that's fine. But, you know, in ours, we didn't feel it as though it's complete until we said a few prayers. Basically, because you lived in the same house, I think, for 40 years, a long time.
Slightly controversial question, I suppose. I mean, do you think it's better to do a khatam in the way that perhaps you did and many, many Muslims around the world do? Or would it be better to actually feed the poor and to focus on the poor more? Charity and giving of alms is one of the five pillars of the faith, isn't it? It's part of the faith, whereas khatams aren't.
Yeah, well, the strange thing is, I think our khatam was like feeding the poor, because basically we gave the money for the charity to give to the poor, and the prayers were just said as they came to get food. So basically, it's kind of a more modern way of doing it, I suppose, that we're saying the prayers as well, we're having the gathering together, saying some prayers, giving them food. And then because it was, we sent too much money, she said, so she did two or three khatams for her, basically just encouraging people to say a prayer for her. But I think every step really helped, because it was like everybody together and everybody talking about it and praying and, you know, they're sharing your grief. And like I said, we were all united in our grief. So that was nice. I mean, it gives you kind of peace.
And I know you were extremely close to your mother, like we were with my mother.
Yeah.
You did everything for her.
I did. Absolutely. She lived with us. We did everything for her possible.
Well, you always want to do the best, don't you?
Yeah.
The same with us. You know, when you're in a position to, you do want to take them to places that, you know, you've seen and you know that, you know, they would love to see. And it's just a lovely thing to do, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. She was a spoiled person. Spoiled granny.
So they should be. I mean, you know, they've brought up 3-4 children.
Yeah.
And, you know, times were hard in those days. I know how difficult it was for my mother and everything she had to go through.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was very similar for your mother too.
Yeah, she was always called the queen. We all used to call her the queen, and the girls were, you know, treating her like a queen and a diva and this and that and the other. But yeah. Yeah, but they're a blessing, aren't they? And I miss that too.
I'm Rahila Bano. You're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service.
Der Disney Plus Serientipp.
Hey, hier spricht Meredith Grey, direkt aus dem Grey Sloan Memorial Hospital. Wir suchen Verstärkung, denn hier kommen viele neue Fälle rein. Unsere Station ist voll mit außergewöhnlichen Patienten, jungen Ärzten in Ausbildung und viel zwischenmenschlichem Drama. Also schau schnell vorbei.
Grey's Anatomy, die neuen Folgen und alle Staffeln nur auf Disney Plus streamen. Abo schon ab 5,99 € pro Monat. Und nun viel Spaß beim Podcast, wünscht Disney Plus.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that makes using different currencies easy. With Wise, you can send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate. There are no hidden fees either. See exactly what you'll pay up front, every time. Join 16 million customers already saving with Wise. To learn how Wise could work for you, download the app or visit wise.com.
For this episode of Heart and Soul, I'm sharing my personal story of how I chose to remember my mother Bano, a devout Muslim who passed away in November 2021.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allah, I'm reading Surah Fatiha for my mother. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alhamdulillah rabbil alameen ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, maliki yawmiddin, iyyaka na'budu wa iyyaka nasta'in, ihdinas siratal mustaqim, siratal ladzina.
Most mornings I recite Surah Fatiha in Arabic. It's referred to as the Lord's Prayer. It's for my mum, Bano, and for my mother-in-law, Valerie, who was a Christian and who passed away a year before mom.
Allah, please forgive any sins that she committed. Allah, please protect her. Allah, please protect her and keep her in the shade all the time. La ilaha illallah Muhammad.
It was interesting to hear Bushra tell me about how the gathering of her friends and relatives helped her in her time of grief. But what should I do? Maybe I need to take some advice from an old acquaintance.
Assalamu alaikum. How are you, Abdul?
Assalamu alaikum. I'm okay. Very nice to see you after quite some time.
You know, it's been a long time.
Abdul Hamid Qureshi is an imam and director of an Islamic centre in the UK.
I'm going to ask you about khatams. And I mean, why do many Muslims have a khatam or a congregational prayer reading for their deceased members of the family or once their loved ones have passed away? Why is it so important for them to do this?
I think that over the period of time, certain things have became a tradition, actually, cultural tradition, not necessarily a faith tradition. From faith tradition, if somebody passed away and the thing you have to do to shroud them properly, give them bath and do the funeral prayers and bury them. So that's end of the matter. So you bury them. After that, there is a 3 days of what you call a grieving days. Yeah. So those whose loved one passed away, they are grieving in that. And then their relatives, other people, usually provide them food. But otherwise, all the other things are traditional. Somebody come, okay, now they started, okay, we should do the dua. Then it changed into we should recite Quran for some of the blessings for them. But it does not have, I mean, the blessing of life is that when you are living, you do right things. You live a righteous life, life according to the principles and values given to you. That's the best form. You know, these are all traditions and it has such a variance. You go to Muslim communities of India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, they will do differently. You go to the Arab countries, they will do differently. So it's all variation. It has very little to do with faith in real terms. It is just adopted practices. It's just, you know, out of thinking something good about the deceased person, they started to introduce, and then it becomes a tradition.
No, but a lot of Muslims actually do it because in the belief that they would invite 20, maybe 30, 40 people around to read the Quran, in the belief that the person who has passed away will get the blessings. Is this right?
No, blessing, you see, these are perceived ideas. Something is said, but they imply it like this. No, I don't, my own personal opinion, people do that and there may be some mileage in it, but in real terms, that is not how Prophet has guided to us.
Is it just a question of a difference of opinion among scholars from different schools of thoughts in Islam?
No, it's also that people develop the traditional, you know, that we are doing something extra or we are reading, it will give the blessing to the deceased person. That, you know, there is a conclusion to that based on something good. Now, in essence, there is nothing wrong with it, but making it as an obligation is a problematic.
It's not part of it.
And then even if you are poor, you don't afford it, you can't afford it, you are still spending money to do that. You know, that you are you're feeding so many people. And no, it's not like that. You don't need to do things like that.
So while I could have a khatam for mom, it's not an obligation, more a tradition. But giving charity is one of the 5 pillars of Islam. And while Nabila and I were arranging mom's funeral at the mosque, The funeral director asked us to consider Sadhgar Jariya. This is where we would donate money to a worthy cause on behalf of Mom, and it would benefit her in the afterlife. We fed 100 orphans for a month in Afghanistan. My brother set up a water project for a poor Muslim community in Vietnam. And Nabila's working with a women's charity in Pakistan, where they're making embroidered bags with Mom's name on them, which will be sold in the UK. Mom always wanted to help those who couldn't support themselves, and I was starting to think this might be how I might want to remember her in a more lasting way. I was in Pakistan earlier this year to visit my maternal cousins in Lahore and in Islamabad. I recorded some of their memories of Mom to keep as a personal record of my trip and to share with my family in the UK.
She was very loving and caring.
And social bhi thi bahut zyada aur Islamic bhi thi. Very religious person.
I have to say it's really lovely to see you all because I haven't been here for...
I hadn't seen Samira, Rabina and her daughter Kashifa for 14 years since my last work trip to the country to report on the floods. But the trip to see Mum's family in Pakistan also gave me a chance to see firsthand what I had finally decided to do to honour my mum.
It's just gone 7 o'clock in the morning here in Islamabad and my driver's just arrived to take... we're just heading onto the motorway now and it's going to take us about 2.5 hours, I think. So with any luck, we should hit Peshawar district at about 9 o'clock this morning, and I'm going to be meeting Mukhtar Zaman from the Abbasine Foundation, who's managing their charity projects out there for the charity. And it seems pretty clear on the motorway, actually.
After my thoughts about how my mum would have been concerned about people who were less fortunate than us, and after me, my sister and my brother had given Sadhgar Jariya, I found the answer in Pakistan. A chance meeting in the UK had introduced me to the Abbasine Foundation, a charity building two schools for the children of brickmakers in a remote part of the country. It's where I've decided to fund a water and solar system for the schools in my mother's name. While I was visiting Mum's cousins, I took the opportunity to visit the project and share what I learned with my family on my social media.
Assalamu alaikum, kaise hain aap? How are you?
Wa alaikum salam. Khairiyat ji, alhamdulillah.
He's well, yeah.
Okay, and he's looking after the water project, yeah. Is he, for us? और आप पानी का यहाँ इस इंस्टॉलेशन के बारे में आपने किया है सब कुछ
जी मैं इधर ही था और सारा काम जो है ना मेरे ही सेज ही लिव्स हियर नियर बाय एंड ही वाज द प्रोजेक्ट सॉर्ट ऑफ इन चार्ज फॉर द वॉल्स एज वेल एज फॉर द वाटर विल प्रोजेक्ट एंड ही सुपरवाइज इट हिमसेल्फ इन द पाइप सो वी आर वेरी कॉन्फिडेंट दैट दिस इज गोइंग टू कंटिन्यू बिकॉज वी हैव हिट द राइट स्पॉट.
And you also have some solar panels as well that we've funded. How many solar panels are on there?
Sumra solar panel idi sodi. Otta solar panel idi.
Sir, inverter da.
Inverter da. Or they had about 8 solar panels on the roof, but then it have the inverter and the battery along with that, and all the switches and the filters and the pipes in the water well, so then they can get the clean water out. And again, in a more sustainable way, because the sun is quite shining.
Strong, it's beating down on us, actually.
Yes, true. So it does generate a lot of good energy, and it's easy to pull out the water. I'm Dr. Mukhtar Zaman, and I'm also the founder chief executive of Abbasine Foundation, Pakistan. And I look after all the Abbasine Foundation core and other capital projects in KP and Pakistan.
And you've brought me to the site of the water installation where it's been installed and where the solar panels have been installed here as well.
And we are going to have two schools here, boys and girls of a secondary level of age up to age 16, 17. And we are surrounded by the brick kilns and again about 700 of them. Each brick kiln will have about 150 employees and the whole family is living on site and working in the kilns. So the children's of those families are going to be our...
There are about 1,000 children that want to cater for, which is a lot.
Eventually, because, and again, that will be over the years, so they will grow with us and we will grow with them.
It was 33 degrees Celsius and the sun was beating down on us when I visited Khyber Pakhtunkhwa in April. Here, water is the gift of life. Many Muslims already donate to educational and health projects, but it's something Dr. Zaman is seeing more of.
Why do you think there has been this change in more, especially people from the Muslim community and younger Muslim community profile, demographic profile, coming forward to donate and to pledge money for ongoing charity in memory of their loved ones?
I think, again, is more awareness around it. People know about it. They obviously have means to verify the organizations, their credibility, their track record, and they get references from individuals. So they get a personal sort of satisfaction through friends and families and other contacts, as well as they through electronic media and the Charity Commission website, that they see the track records of the charity. So they are able to verify what people used to say about or still say about and talk about or do and plan to do. So I think that's what probably has helped. Second, I think people have seen the benefits.
Yes.
Now more and more people are coming out to see it on ground. And obviously we make an effort to bring people either through tracks or through visits and they see it. So once they see it for themselves, they become the best ambassadors.
Yes.
And they go back and tell others. So I think it's a multiplier effect which is happening.
So what would Mum have made of the causes we've donated to on her behalf? Back in Birmingham, I asked Nabila.
I think Mum would have really loved it, wouldn't she? That the fact that her daughters are independent and they've done this in her name and really to help the poor, which is what she always tried to do.
Yeah, it's about making people independent, basically, and getting them to stand on their own two feet without them becoming reliant on money.
She would have, I mean, from the conversations I had with her, she would have been pleased that we've put the money to good use and that we haven't spent it on what she used to call or describe as feeding people who can afford to feed themselves. You know, we've used the money for the right reasons, for the right sort of causes to help those who need the help and to improve their lives in a way.
Well, that comes back to faith and that comes back to what she believed in terms of charity and in the Muslim religion in particular and in her faith, charity was important.
Well, it's one of the five pillars, isn't it, to give alms?
Yeah.
Both in life and also after life as well.
Yes.
I think we followed Mum's wishes and hope she'll reap God's rewards and blessings while she's watching from the gardens of paradise. I'm Rahila Bano, and you've been listening to Heart and Soul. The executive producers were Rajiv Gupta and Rob Cave.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that makes using different currencies easy. With Wise, you can send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate. There are no hidden fees either. See exactly what you'll pay up front, every time. Join 16 million customers already saving with Wise. To learn how Wise could work for you, download the app or visit wise.com.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else have we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik. Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about unexpected science history.
Well, that's the unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen, wherever you get your podcasts.